Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which we review an audiobook of a fantastical or a science fictional nature. I'm leaving that one in. Leaving it in. It's that good.
We're doing it live.
Frigate.
Frel.
We do have the explicit tag.
We do. Anyway, who chose this week?
I believe it was me.
Kevin, what are we reading this week?
Dungeon Born by Dakota Kraut.
Who is it narrated by?
Vikas Adam.
Cool name, isn't it? Anyway, what was on the back of the book?
Words.
Words.
What kind of words?
It's a Shakespeare reference.
Words that you classy. Can read, I guess.
Power words?
I don't think so, but in the book there were references to them.
All right.
Power word vague or something.
Power word vague.
Okay. Back of the book said...
Explosives.
For eons, conquering dungeons has been the most efficient way to become a strong adventurer. Although not everything is as straightforward as it seems, several questions have always plagued the minds of those who enter these mythical places of power. Why are there so many monsters? Where do the amazing weaponry and heavy gold coins come from? Why does the very air fill with life-giving energies? Cal has all the answers to these age-old questions for a very simple reason. He is a dungeon heart, a soul forced against his will into a magical stone. After several lonely years, Cal was able to regain sentience, allowing him to form new memories while slowly growing a dungeon around himself. With help from a friend, Cal learned how to create monsters and traps, increasing his power and size quickly. When a threat to his existence rears its head, Cal decides that he will do anything to stay alive and become stronger. Unfortunately for treasure seekers, the fastest way for Cal to achieve his goal is to eat anyone that enters his depths.
I mean, isn't that a lesson that we've all learned over the years?
Yes.
Always fear the pack of murder hobos.
That is one way to interpret that.
You know, first of all, I want to congratulate you on doing that one on one take. We're getting better, weirdly enough, at reading these things aloud. It's a skill that we've gradually learned.
Speak for yourself.
And then secondly, you know, it suddenly made me think you could set part of this to music. Why are there so many monsters? Where do the amazing weaponry and heavy gold coins come from?
Those were the original lyrics, you know.
Yes, of course. All right.
And to think today I was reading a thread on Twitter about, is there a name for the dragon that's used as the ampersand in Dungeons and Dragons?
Is it ampersand?
Isn't it Gary?
It might very well be. It could just be shortened to Andy.
Well, remember, an ampersand really means and per se.
Yes, and so he should just be called per se.
Yes.
Or Percy.
Percy.
Yes.
Now we go.
Yeah.
We have done it.
Well, it's been officially submitted to the, you know, Wizards of the Coast.
And all we had to do was say it. Hey, that's amazing.
I didn't actually say that it was our doing. It was someone else's doing.
Well, anyway, tangentially related to this book. I really enjoyed this book. As I'm so fond of saying, it's not really a fantasy novel. Now, granted.
It's a fantasy novel.
It's a fantasy novel, and I'm talking nonsense. But what I really mean is it doesn't have sort of your standard kind of fantasy novel plot. This is something called lit RPG.
Are you saying this is not technically a novel?
Well, I mean, I tend to use technically in a very technical sense.
You got learning for that.
It's the best kind of correct, technically correct.
Technically correct. I mean, and it always sounds like I'm insulting the book when I'm trying to praise it and setting out in a bold new direction. And even that sounds like I'm being a jerk.
It's our specialty.
It's our specialty. Once again, I really enjoyed reading this.
Well, it is our specialty, praising with faint damnation. Exactly. Instead of damning with faint praise.
So this is basically what we call lit RPG. Well, we don't call it that. That's actually a term that's out there.
We call it not a fantasy novel.
Well, we call many things not a fantasy novel. Table, for example, not a fantasy novel. Wall, Barry.
Yes. I am not a fantasy novel.
Yet.
I do have fantasies, but...
Do not describe them. That would be for our previous podcast.
Horror novel.
Our previous episode, at least. since this is episode 70, you do the math. Anyway,
I am a monster.
Ain't we all? So Lit RPG is, it's this relatively newly defined genre where instead of sort of taking place in a fantasy realm with, but with novelistic conventions, you basically are following game conventions instead. So, in this book, they talk a lot about, well, I'm level, I forget if they were
level F. Yeah, they were using some, I don't know what it was right. from, but
they were calling out very explicit sort of a very explicit level system. And they were calling out very specific power levels and ways of leveling up and leveling down. And the entire thing was very similar to the experience of either playing an RPG or really watching a role-playing game walkthrough or, an online game walkthrough. And that, it doesn't sound very exciting from the outside, but it really was very enjoyable and kind of a zen experience in some ways.
Does this explain the phenomenon of Twitch TV?
Yeah, I think so.
Watching other people play games.
I think we're discovering that we actually do like this sort of experience of getting into the flow of a kind of like a game-like experience. And there are different ways of doing that, including reading a novel. Yes, I know I said it wasn't a novel, but it's a bunch of pages that are written in a fictional format. So I'm full of it.
It's like people who like listening to podcasts about books that they haven't read yet.
Yeah, but there aren't any of those.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like it's come full circle where, role-playing was, partly based, inspired by novels.
Right.
And now it's kind of, computer games or, some of them based on tabletop RPGs. And now it's kind of like now I've gone back into novels and other right. fiction. And
yeah, it's full circle.
I often go back and reread the log files from my NetHack games.
I mean, I honestly don't know. Maybe you do.
Tail-F.
I use less because it's more.
That's technically true, but I'm just used to it.
I got nothing. Okay.
And
so
there we went.
Did we? So, the caveat would be basically this is what it is. I would say, give this a first couple of chapters, and if you don't like what the first, say, three chapters are, you're not going to like the rest of the book, because that's what this book is.
Well, if you like Dungeons & Dragons, and you like discussing things about Dungeons & Dragons, and then this book is probably for you.
It's like if you wish your novels had stat blocks and leveling up and things like that.
And
then
to
that's
be honest,
what this has. I mean, and it goes, and so I often complain about books not having enough physics, which I kind of define as something that's like self-consistency in the world building. And sometimes it also involves like details of how the world works. And this is like mostly that. Almost
pretty much, I won't say too far the other way. This is the opposite.
Yeah.
Pole.
It almost went over, my tipping point of like, okay, that's almost too much description of how this works, but not quite. It was like, I was just starting to starting to rub it raw a bit. And then it was like, okay, not quite. It was okay.
Exactly. So yeah, this basically is like, this is sort of like a dungeon combat game portion of it. Then there's sort of Sim Dungeon, where we sort of take the dungeon's point of view as he tries to expand himself and make himself harder for the adventurers to come in. And then there's like Fantasy Sim City, as the guy who owns the mountain is trying to
build up. It's like, I'm going to put a temple here and I'll put a this there. And
right.
My God, why is the pleasure house like 14 stories high now?
You're right. And
I don't understand the question.
Well,
it was mostly rhetorical. I mean, I know why it's 14 stories high.
Okay. So finally, I thought that the narrator just did an amazing job on this and really added to the book, because this is somebody who can do a huge variety of different voices, to the point where I actually stopped the book and double checked that this only had a single narrator.
Yeah. I think he kind of knocked the ball out of the park on this one.
Yeah.
I hope he did the next two books as well.
Yeah, I really hope so. All right. Well,
and now that we've basically ruined reality and guaranteed that he won't be doing the next two books.
That's kind of what we do around here.
Jinx.
Sorry, Vikas.
Anyway, what do you guys think?
I also enjoyed this book.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I really did enjoy the sort of the game aspect of it. I mean, I guess that's the whole point of the, if we decide it is lit RPG, which I think it is, but
well, the author was, you know, interviewed on a lit RPG site, but there is an entire thread on lit RPG defining lit RPG.
Yeah, I did read through that a little bit, and it is interesting because for a long time I was coming to this from the point of view of D&D, you know, tabletop, you know, RPGs and stuff like that, and then it took me a while to realize that at least some of this was from the point of view of, you know, an MMO or some kind of computer RPG. Mm-hmm. The way they describe some mechanics that we can go into in the spoilers, but you know, there's a lot of overlap, but there are some things that are very specifically right, like respawning or something, you know.
I am almost tempted not to take a spoiler break because this is the classic unspoilable book.
kind of. But the thing I did like about it a lot is sort of, it's not really, retcon isn't quite right, but it's kind of like, this gives a reason why a dungeon crawl exists in D&D. It's like the thing that doesn't make any sense, why there would be this like dungeon right, buried in the middle of nowhere filled with monsters that just sit in a room waiting for someone to come kill them.
Right. And then right, when you kill them, gold magically appears.
Yeah. Or they have gold in the room, but it's like, why would, you know, Mosk, you know, have gems or something, you know? And you could, you know, explain that away. Well, they killed someone that had gems and they died and now the gems are here, but you know.
Or moss invests very well.
Yes. But
it's a well-appointed moss.
Yes.
This kind of explains like, oh, this is why they stay here. And, you know, and they go through that in the book. But I thought that was a fun part of it.
Right.
Yeah. I also really enjoyed this book and I actually give it a recommendation. Thumbs up.
Thumbs.
It has the Barry seal of approval.
Thumbs well, exist.
I mean, like Kevin was saying, it does sort of explain the phenomenon of having, you know, villages in like really, really close proximity to very evil places. Sort of like the classic temple of elemental evil. Why is there a village, you know, surrounding the, you know, at the base of the mountain of, you know, the dungeon, basically.
Right. It all makes economic sense.
Right. And in a lot of ways, I think this book kind of dives into the sort of symbiotic nature of dungeons need adventurers and adventurers need dungeons.
And dungeons need love, too.
They need the most love of all.
Dungeons have feelings, too.
Ooh, sorry. I didn't really match your pitch on that.
Fix it in post.
I'll fix it with a post.
Yes.
So, okay, we've completed the first level of this dungeon. It's time to move on to the disturbing boss monster that is our spoilers section. We shall return, for we are sci-fi.
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 All right, so welcome back to our spoilers section. So, yeah, let's talk a bit more about lit RPG, which unfortunately is not role-playing games that you play well lit. Well, that's debatable, actually.
Speak for yourself.
Let's try that again. So, of course, since this is a new literary form, there is a lot of debate as to what exactly its definition is or whether this book actually fits into it or not, and therefore whether or not we should be talking about it. But so at least one of them was it should be sort of a metafictional construct in which the players know that they're in a game. Now, in this book, the players don't know that they're in a game per se. There's at least the skeleton of a story in which there's like a guild, and the guild has these levels.
And there are rules.
And so it's essentially a game, even though it's more of a, you know, it's the game of life, shall we say.
Well, they're very conscious of the mechanics of the game.
Right.
And they spend a long time through Dale, the owner one of the discoverers of the dungeon, you know, they level him up. So they go through a lot of the mechanics and a lot of narration about how the mechanics work.
Right. Now, yes. And a lot of the mechanics for magic use and so forth, revolve around chi and I guess Reiki. They never say Reiki, but that's kind of what this sort of energy meridians and
right. I mean, you know, I
acupuncture think acupuncture type of physics.
Yeah, there was the that was the element they were calling essence, I think.
Right.
Yeah, and they talked about your ki spiral.
Right.
And which I kept visualizing as K-E-Y, even though I knew they didn't right. mean that.
I thought you kept thinking about it as C-H-E-E-S-E.
Oh, well, yes. The first time I heard them say it, they said, and now do something with your cheese spiral. And I was like, cheese spiral? What are they talking about? And then I'm like, oh,
it's
I see
part
what
of your
mean.
Standard adventurer's kit. Didn't you ever look?
Yes. It's like, you know, caltrops, you know,
is it like an apple spiraler? It's like, you know, something that cuts off little strips of cheese.
Yes. You know, that would be...
Well, yes.
It looks nice on a little hors d'oeuvre plate.
It's like those big brie, you know, chunks of brie that are the full circle, right? You just turn them into a big spiral, so it seems like you have more brie than you actually have.
We should really talk about this more.
Level up your cheese spiral.
Level up your presentation, sir.
Exactly.
You know, I would almost like to have another novel take place just in the Pleasure Palace or whatever it's called, which is just about the cooking, and therefore they really do have the cheese spiral.
In the restaurant, yes.
In the restaurant, yes.
And then we could have a whole economy based on things like cheese and, you know, how do you get it to the... You know, space station and, book.
Different book.
Which is also somewhat based on a role-playing game.
Yes.
Yeah, so I did enjoy a lot, you know, the mechanics portion of it. And I thought it was interesting that they did the player, but it starts out and kind of is centered around this dungeon, right? You know, this thief is killed by necromancers and he's, you know, pulled into this soul gem, you know, you thought it was a particular spell.
I thought it was a magic jar.
Yeah, it was something like that. You know, they didn't, they never said, but basically.
I mean, that's
you know,
sort of like the classic use of a magic jar is you steal someone's soul.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Put it somewhere else. Safe.
Store pencils.
Yeah, phylactery.
And for you new kids, that's a horcrux.
You be nice.
So.
That was me being nice.
That is true.
I mean, Harry Potter did get it wrong. That was a phylactery, right? At least a series of them.
Yes. So the thing that was interesting is, you know, this isn't the first time that this trope has come up, essentially, of the dungeon point of view,
sure.
Or the monster's point of view. And it is not that common still. And it made me think of, you know, one is there's a game that I played on iOS that's called Tiny Heroes, which you basically play the dungeon and you level up, you get new traps and, you know, you try to stop all those stupid heroes coming in stealing all your gold.
Isn't this sort of like a, you know, tower defense game?
It's kind of like that. It's that general concept, but it, you know, it's from the point of view of the dungeon is the main point, but then there was a game in 1997 called Dungeon Keeper, which, you know, I even saw other people mentioned in reviewing this book saying, yeah, it's kind of like Dungeon Keeper. And, mm-hmm. You know, we're in that same case, I guess, you know, you were basically a dungeon and I never really played it, but I did kind of look at it a little bit. So I'm familiar with it.
Oh, I wanted to see if like something that I thought was an in-joke may or may not have been an in-joke, which yeah. was, Cal builds the gazebo on top of the mountain.
I think that was sort of a sideways mention about sort of like a...
Because, right, there's this whole...
Infamous slash apocryphal. I don't know if it's like a...
Oh.
Qualifies as an internet legend, but...
Okay.
At some point, some people are playing a Dungeons & Dragons game, and the DM essentially described what the players were seeing, and he says, oh, and there's a gazebo, and the guy's like, I attack it. And he's like, what are you talking about? Because apparently the player had never heard of a gazebo.
But there is something called a gazebrew or something like that.
There's a gazebrew demon. Yeah,
right, exactly. And so he thought that it was that. He's just like, I attack it. And he's just like, I shoot it with an arrow.
It is. There is another story that one of my friends, one of his young kids was playing, and he had described, hey, there's, you know, a traitor, you know, sitting in the inn. And he's like, well, I kill him. And he's like, why do you kill the traitor? It's like, well, because he betrayed his country.
Yes. And
I mean, it's a radical anti-capitalist stance.
It works in a fantasy RPG setting. Like, okay, so now I understand why you were talking about the gazebo, because I was like, what are you talking about? Is this some kind of bizarre, like,
I did,
you know, Sound of Music reference or something?
Oh, gazebo.
I mean, granted, we are talking about me here. The reason that I didn't actually explain further is because I assumed you guys, since...
I got it.
I assumed that since this was a fantasy reference that I vaguely knew, that you guys would know it immediately. So I said, oh, I don't want to talk down to them.
Yes. I actually hadn't gotten to that part when you mentioned it. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll get to that later. And then, and then he mentions gazebo and I'm like, okay, I guess I'm missing something when you said something.
Hills are alive with the sound of gazebo.
So
yes, I realized that that's, you know,
that was again, the original lyrics. Yeah. So then there was one other that I thought of. There was an old, second edition D&D module called Reverse Dungeon, where the players played, played monsters, and hey, it's crazy. You play monsters in the dungeon instead of those nasty heroes coming in, killing it. But the funny thing was, in one of the appendices, apparently it said, this is a great, time that you could do some additional different kind of role playing, where it's like, well, maybe those goblins aren't evil. Maybe they're just misunderstood or something.
And wait, the role in role playing games is an ROLL.
I think that's supposed to be it. Yeah. That's why there's all those, like, what do they call it? Dice or something.
Yeah. Something like that.
Fun.
Yes.
All right. Let's see.
I mean, it is kind of, if you've ever played the role of dungeon master for Dungeons and Dragons, right? It is sort of you against the players, and some people do get kind of wrapped up in, hey, I didn't actually manage to kill any of you, so apparently I failed.
Yeah, gotta work harder.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what kind of game you're running and everything. It's like, are you trying to kill the players off or not? And like, sometimes DMs do try to do that.
Well, there's also that sort of fine balance between, making it challenging versus,
right,
letting the characters just kind of walk through the game and not actually face any, potential loss.
Right. And that was one kind of funny thing of what they did with, the dungeon is called Cal because, hey, you're near some calcium, his Will the Wisp, teacher says. And so he is basically like, I guess what would he be like? I'm not even sure what his alignment would be, but he's definitely not good, right?
Well, he's like chaotic neutral at best.
I don't think he actually has.
He doesn't have a classic alignment.
He doesn't have a classical alignment. I think I would actually characterize him as
neutral,
as neutral. But from a other dungeons perspective, he actually might be like a neutral good character, character, but
right,
from the adventurer's perspective, he's evil. But, on top of it, they have this, we were mentioning earlier that there was this sort of essence characteristic, and some of the characteristics he's picking up is both, infernal and celestial.
Right.
Which is kind of on either end of the spectrum.
Yeah, he had kind of he has an honor code, right? And they kind of said, there's different like types of essence, like earth, water, and fire and stuff like that. And like you said, infernal and celestial. Is there
an earth, wind, and fire song in here somewhere?
Yeah, somewhere. Air too.
And he actually talks it over with his with Danny, his dungeon wisp, who's sort of like his mentor, and is saying that, I don't feel bad about killing these guys. It's what I do.
It's the way of things.
It's the way of things.
I gotta eat.
It's not my morality anymore.
Right. And I think at that time he wasn't even sure that he had been human.
He had no idea at that point.
Well, he had some vague memories of being human. He sort of remembers that he hates
necromancers.
I hate necromancers. Yes. Yeah. Which is his rallying
that's
cry.
That's his, we'll do it live.
Well, yes, the necromancers killed him. Right. And so that kind of helped.
It's closer to shut up, Mr. Spock.
Yeah. That was kind of his, one of his defining traits, I guess, was like, okay, I won't be evil because necromancers killed me.
Right. The TV trope name that I'm looking for is Berserk Button.
I don't know that I know the exact definition of that.
But you have not spent as much time quality surfing.
I think we all know that.
Yeah. I think the only TV trope links I've ever looked at are the ones you sent me.
Yes. Well, I've obviously got to step up my game.
But yeah, so I did enjoy him leveling up, where he kind of learns how to use, you know, okay, I've learned how to use this new power. And they had, because
I now have armored bunnies.
Well, right. That I did look sort of like the, you know, they weren't ever called Vorpal bunnies, but that's sort of what I thought, right? Like,
yeah, I think that was sort of a, you know, very, you know, coy tip of the hat to the Vorpal bunny from.
Well, and Monty Python.
Monty Python, yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was, especially like, you know, when they come out and he's like, oh, these people were killed. It's like, what was it? It was a giant bunny. And like, everyone's like snickering.
Which was my favorite scene.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was funny too. And I know that I like a book on some level, or at least that it has certain, you know, fantasy elements like this, when I start imagining, oh, this would be a cool game. And of course, like I said, there were games, but you could easily imagine the mechanics because they're basically
this
laying them out for you.
This is short-circuiting.
I know.
Several steps for
you. This would be a great game because it was based on a game.
It's basically like a big stat block that is it's going through. And
exactly.
I mean, I guess that's the only thing really that, like you're saying, this isn't a fantasy book. It's like I wouldn't say this is avant-garde, you know, but it's like a new, but you know, this whole like lit RPG or whatever, it's something that is not a traditional format plot.
Well, I mean, on the one hand, I was kind of thinking that what we were going to get here was something very based in role-playing games, you know, before I started reading.
Right.
I was just sort of thinking, oh, this is going to be really based on role-playing games, but it's really going to focus a lot more on, you know, developing Cal as a character, having a fantasy plot where he'll have to like link up with a bunch of other dungeons or something like that. And instead, it really just followed him leveling up quite a bit. And you know, I would still like to read the other version that I kind of had in my head, but this is perfectly enjoyable to read as well.
So I wonder if one of the things that kind of threw us for a, you know, mental exploration on this subject is the fact is, if this was a science fiction book, right, what if say something like Leviathan Wakes was all from the perspective of the virus, right, where it essentially takes over the ship and becomes its own, you know, dungeon there, right?
That is interesting.
I mean, because that just sort of came to my mind, because when I read the book, I just kind of took it at face value. And I'm like, hey, this is kind of, you know, it's a fun listen. And
I mean,
I didn't spend too much time dwelling on the fact that, you know, it's a new genre, but or a new type of book. But I just kind of just left it as fantasy. And, you know, it's certainly a unique perspective for the book. You know, I mean, my God, what would happen if 2001 was written from Hal's perspective? It's like, I'm going to kill you bastards.
Like, I'm so confused.
Watch this.
Dirty mammals.
Leaving skin cells everywhere. I'm going to space you all.
I mean, this is some days what my perspective is.
I'm going to go open the door. I'm going to space everyone out of the house now.
Next time I knock on the door to come here, he's just like, I'm sorry, Steven. That's something I cannot allow to happen.
Or something like that.
Or something like that. That's a later line.
Hope you're wearing a spacesuit.
Anyway, I think one of the things that interested me about this as a new genre was, so I was listening to a podcast where they were talking about a concept called flow. And so a flow activity is something where you get really into something where there's, you know, obvious goals and you can sort of do a individual steps towards them. And usually they're very repetitive activities. So it's a lot like the plot of this book because they're going through the dungeon every time. It's a lot like gameplay as well. Right. Gosh, what a coincidence.
The dungeon resets itself every morning.
Exactly.
Yes, they said even the iron that they mined got reset to zero and it's all ready to mine again.
Right. And so usually with a novel, what you're getting is sort of this escalating conflict, which I guess you're getting here, but only in sort of a very, you know, a very, very measured, ratcheted kind of way. Oh, okay, we've got this side ratchets up, so that side ratchets up. Whereas in a novel, you usually have, you know, well, okay, here's your climax, and then here's your denouement. And for this one, it really, the plot line is sort of like a gradual slope upwards, or actually more like a staircase.
Yeah, I mean, this is a phenomenon you see in a lot of RPG games where, you know, the player characters are leveling, you know, quote, leveling up.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a very marked step increases in power. And the person who's running the game has to kind of keep up with that and, you know, sometimes exceed it. And sometimes the players exceed it. And then it's sort of this, it's like a power dynamic in the game, you know. So when do you, you know, when does that, you know, start and stop, right?
Right, exactly. So, yeah. But it really made me think about the fact that, well, there's sort of the classical novel progression for things, and that, you know, that gives readers some pleasure and takes them out of things in a certain way. But maybe we can just learn from game mechanics, take those and put them into a novel, which is, I think that's, you know, a better depiction of what Lit RPG is trying to do than some of the definitions that I saw in the actual attempts at defining Lit RPG and the Lit RPG site.
Lit RPG.
Yes.
Lit RPG. Like I was saying earlier, there, you know, when I was reading this definitely from like a tabletop, like D&D perspective, and a lot of it kind of made sense, but then some of the stuff didn't quite meld, like respawning monsters, and like they had a mechanic description of, oh, and then when the monster dies, it triggers the spawning of its loot. It just magically appears in the air and like it turns into gold coins when you kill the monster or something. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, that was sort of clashing with my brain saying that's not very D&D like, but it seems familiar. And then I was like, oh, okay, it's like kind of computer game, right?
Right.
You know, like I actually saw it as I actually saw the respawning of monsters and loot as sort of like the convention experience, where it's, yeah, you know, they're going to run the same adventure, you know, at 60 different tables over the weekend, right? And every time it's going to be, you know, four or five new people, right? And every time someone runs it, it's always the same thing. It's kind of like playing like duplicate bridge or something, but it's like duplicate RPG. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah, but everybody gets the same experience.
I mean, I was really mapping it to like Diablo. I mean, that's the game that I got the most into that was matched this closest.
Right.
And I mean, that literally, of course, has you kill the monster and something useful appears, you know.
Yeah. Sometimes with this random table list of like,
you know, it's always a little bit disturbing. It's just like you killed the horrible corpse eating monster and food appears. And just like you don't want to think about exactly how that works.
Yeah. Is that from the monster? Well, that was also funny, too, because I was thinking from a, you know, an ethics or morality standpoint or whatever, you know, the dungeon has its own kind of non-human morality. It's like, well, I want to live. I'm a dungeon. I need to eat people, monsters, or whatever, or their essence at least.
Right. Well, I've heard that described as like, what, orange-purple morality or something like that.
But at the very beginning of the book, you know, Dale kills that guy.
Right.
And, you know, and you never hear anything about it after that. And of course, the guy was being a jerk, right? But, you know, does that mean he should have been killed? You know, I guess in this thing, it's fine in a fantasy milieu, right?
But, well, I forget what exactly happened there.
Well, at the very beginning, you know, there were like half a dozen people that were camping on the mountain or something. And, you know, this kind of the older jerk guy is kind of like he finds the entrance to this dungeon, like in a pit. And he's like, oh, awesome. I'm going to go and take it for myself. And then he realizes he can't get down there without a big rope and waking everyone up. So he's like, God damn it. So he wakes everyone up. He wakes them up by like yelling at them and like kicking them in their sleep. So he's not, you know, very bluntly, not a very nice person.
Right. This is Tim, I assume.
I think so. Yeah. And, I mean, you only hear him at the very beginning. So there were several people that they never even mentioned, right? Like swarthy guy and stuff like that. They just called them by that name. You never get their name. Like
meat shield.
Yeah, basically. So they all go in and, you know, including Dale, which is just like, you know, he's not referred to as Dale until like the very end of this little episode, but he is, you know, they're kind of going through, they think it's just a mine. They're like, oh, we're all going to be rich. Then the monsters start attacking them. This is like, you know, the first introduction to adventures to the dungeon. Like,
This is your classic first level adventure.
Yeah, basically, or like the zero level, like, you know, weeder thing or something.
Yeah, for those of you who played Dungeon Crawl Classics.
Yeah, and so, you know, you're going in and, you know, everyone gets killed except for Dale and Tim, the jerk. And like, and so he's basically like, he's like, I'm going to be rich. And Dale's like, what about me? And he's like, shut up, you know, you younger person, you know. Oh, you know,
speaking of berserk buttons.
Yes. He's like, you're stupid. And, you know, shut up when your betters are talking. And Dale pushes him into these like, you know, poisonous mushrooms that eat him. And then he's like, you know, you're not my better, you're just older. My name's Dale, you know, and the guy just dies. And then he's like, hey, now I won't, I'm going to go buy the mountain and, you know, sell it to the Adventurers Guild and stuff. And there's a recurring theme in the book seems to be of like, you know, respecting everybody and not having like high level people just kicking around low-level people because they're newbies or whatever. That's well, kind of what made me think of like MMOs or something too.
Yeah, because that's what sours a lot of MMORPGs apparently is like eventually just everybody's now higher level and then the newbies basically get completely smashed for their raw material.
Compost.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there seems to be, I mean, I haven't played an MMO really, I just only a little bit, but, you know, I played a lot of those. I'm
very worried as to what would happen to me if I started playing those games.
I know people who've lived in MMOs and they enjoy it, but I don't think I have the time to do that. I think that, like you said, that is a common thing of like, you know, crapping on the little guy and like, you know, and there's a theme in here of like, okay, so that's not cool. Everyone was a newbie at some point, right?
Right. I mean, I think that's definitely a thing in modern games that are MMOs specifically, right? I mean, with Dungeons and Dragons, right? Everybody's typically sort of sitting down at a table and they're all starting, you know, with first level characters or something, right?
Right.
You're all sort of starting at the, you know, the same power level. You know, some people, you know, and, you know, their characters unfortunately perish or something, but
right.
And they may come in, you know, minus a little bit of power, but usually you don't start them back at first level.
Right. Or you just say, here's something really powerful, you know, try to keep up for a while.
Right. Just don't get killed, which actually is what happens in one of these scenes. Like your job, you know, Dale, your job is to go into the dungeon and not get killed.
Right. Right. And although I've experienced the other thing too, where you go in and some people that are very high level, you know, because when you level up, you have the stuff that when you're low level would have been amazing. And now it's just, you know, crap. It's like, you know, because it's like compared to the power level of your items now, it's like, you know, you can't even, it's not even,
right.
It's not even worth selling it, basically.
Here you go, noob. Here's all my crap magic gear that I don't need anymore.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, we play Ingress.
Right.
And we do a lot of that of, oh, yes, hello, new
hello,
player.
Hello, tadpoles.
Please take all of this stuff. You know, we're carrying it around and it's just taking up space.
I just sort of collected by accident and I know it's you know, super helpful for you, but, you know, it's mostly just weighing me down at this point.
Right. And so I don't think they show that too much in here except for the, you know, that group helping him out, but he kind of paid for it. So, you know. But yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing because it wasn't just that one scene. It came up like three or four times in the book of somebody that was high power sort of being a jerk.
It even kind of perpetuates itself once the guild masters, you know, kind of arrive and are directing things, right? They do spend some time sort of tearing, you know, Dale's key apart, right? To reform him properly, right? Because, well, basically you know, I was screwed it up for the last couple of years and, you know, you're not going to be, grown, you know, optimally. Right. So we're going to, you know, re-roll your character classes, so to speak.
Yeah. I thought this was interesting too, because it seemed like it seemed very explicitly not D&D that it was like, you know, everyone started out at a certain level and you could pick your skills as you joined. That seemed to be the implication, but it also seemed like a magic, not everyone became a magic user, but that higher level people did have some magical ability, like they had mana ability, whereas before at the lower levels you had, you know, just your essence ability or something.
I need to throw this in at least one point. You are lucky, Gelfling. Only the Emperor may drink your essence.
I mean, if only.
So I totally peg this as like, you know, if you follow Dungeons and Dragons, this is, you know, the 3.5 edition, you know, where they kind of munchkined everything by putting in all these different skills and there was some other mechanic there as well, which is like traits or something. And you could basically, you know, sort of kit out the, you know, the character you really, really, really want, you know, given enough time.
Right.
I mean, I would call this sort of a munchkin novel. I mean, could you define the term munchkin for the non-gamers in our audience who have fallen asleep by now?
I mean, munchkin is, I mean, it's based on I think it's a card game or maybe it's a tabletop game that you sort of just end up collecting weird random powers and doing sort of ridiculous things is what I recall. I've never played a bunch of it. I just use the term generically.
Well, also it's kind of like a lot of min-maxing seem to be involved.
Yeah.
Right. You're doing character construction to win the game rather than to role play.
Right. You're saying, well, if I get this skill at just one more rank, now I get this whole new ability, and that might not fit with, like you said, role playing, but it makes sense to, like, you know, align the spreadsheet in a special way to, like, optimize the amount of power I have.
Well, once again, from TV tropes, the definition that I heard is, a munchkin is someone when you learn that the game is going to be played in the Italian Renaissance court, wants to play as a ninja.
I mean, it is kind of, you know, another term for it might be something like more like metagaming, right? Where the player themselves actually knows more about the world than the actual character does.
Right.
So, and then they end up, you know, leveraging a lot of that. When I play, and I play in a near weekly, you know, game group, we kind of frown on that.
Right. Where it's like, well, very hard to get away from it, though.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, why did you fireball that, you know, seemingly empty room? Well, because I figured there was somebody in it.
Right. You know, it's sort of like the thing of if your group gets split up, and then it's
never split the party.
And then, but you know, when it occasionally happens, and then it's like, oh, okay, well, for no apparent reason, I'm just going to run over to the other side of town because I know they're in trouble over there, yeah, you know, in the metaverse, whatever, as a player, but the characters would have no way of knowing, but you're just like, well, I need a reason to.
Right. Like, I remember one time I was gaming and there was a kindly old man in a church, and I had to really restrain myself from just killing him because there was no reason for him to be there. So he was a monster. I knew he was a monster. He turned out to be a monster, but I had to restrain myself from having the character just shoot him.
Good role player. Yeah. So I guess the one thing, I can't remember now whether we've talked about this, but
a handy tip for daily life.
Yes. Yes.
Kill everyone first.
Steve's tip.
Ding, ding.
Don't randomly shoot people.
Thank you, Kevin. Kevin got the right motto.
So
we got Goofus and Gallant here.
So the one mechanic I did like with the dungeon that made it, you know, particularly think, oh, this, I could imagine, a, you know, playing a game like this, is that he could own, you know, the dungeon was able to generate, you know, monsters and loot, but only something that he had absorbed by something that had died or had been in the dungeon.
Right.
So, you know, if like early on, you know, he's looking for, you know, some way to, and, you know, he was like making mushrooms and moss and stuff, and like a rabbit wanders in, and now, you know, for the rest of the book, all of his monsters are based on rabbits.
It's the rabbit template.
Right. And then, like, you know, of a adventurer drops a sword, it's like, okay, now I can make swords. And like at some point, like, you know, there's several times in the book where he's like, oh, you know, I have finally got a pickaxe. I've been waiting for a pickaxe. And
right.
And like, you know, some, and also there's a magic system where you can make runes and inscribe stuff to make some things magical items. And, you know, the dungeon can inscribe stuff apparently with high accuracy and, you know, make really awesome potions and stuff much better than most of the people that, you know, were making the stuff that were brought down. But once he got the template, he was able to do that and kind of level his, you know, abilities up or something. And
I mean, some part of me kind of wanted him to just start writing notes to Dale and just, you know, hey, Dale, could you bring me some X?
Right.
And I mean, granted, the point of it was those two fighting each other and leveling each other up. But, you know, they could have cooperated a little bit more, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like there was a bit of, you know, string pulling, you know, sort of revealed at the end where it turns out that there is a necromancer who sort of seems to be, you know, he obviously created Cal, right?
Right.
And then on top of it, there's this sort of plant of Danny, the wisp, right, who was sent by Cantor, the sort of flying dungeon thing.
Right. Which, and I was trying to figure out if that was a reference to something, but I don't know.
I mean, there is sort of the old Greyhawk, you know, gnome flying cities or something.
There is an old D&D cartoon episode where there's a flying castle.
Yes.
And Merlin, who was really Venger.
You know, I used to watch that show.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Uni,
run!
Yeah, Cantor sounds like a very familiar name, but I can't place it.
Well, we do have a museum near here that the Cantor family sponsored.
It's actually a fairly common name since it's a religious term.
Well, it just sounds It sounds like a fantasy term or name in some sense, but I did notice they actually did use the word can't.
As you know, in thieves can't?
Yeah, basically. They're like, they dropped into an unknown can't.
Thieves can't steal.
And so that's what makes me think, okay, there has to be some D&D reference, but I'm sure other RPGs use can't as well, so I don't know.
Sometimes they just won't.
but yeah, at the very end, like you said, we find out that, you know, the necromancers who sort of put him in this soul gem or whatever, the dungeon core, were sent to do that, and then they were sent to guide him and to become like an evil dungeon of some kind. And so, yeah, the last scene is sort of like presumably the seed for the next book, I'm assuming, where it's like, okay, go find, you know, the guy who comes and
it's really Strahd.
Yeah. I mean, I've
got Ravenloft.
Oh, is that what you were talking about? I didn't realize.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense that it's something like that. You know, the assassin or whoever that had been sent out to kill Dale or to look to see what was going on with the dungeon, I guess. You know, he comes back and he's like called into his master and he tells him what's going on. And they basically say, well,
did it work?
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, there's lots of monsters and treasures spying up there. So, you know, that's good. And, you know, of course the guys didn't really make it, but it wasn't a total loss. And, you know,
well, it's also the
proof of concept maybe worked or something. And
yeah, I mean, it's also the mechanism they use to sort of infect, Cal, the dungeon, right. With the strange essence that they used, right. Because the assassin leaves the dagger. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And then Dale picks up the dagger and it's sort of instantly like kind of bonded to him. Right. And he realizes that he could, you know, what is it? Suck the essence or the mana out of, you know, anything he kills. But it turns out that the dungeon also learns how to do this as well.
Sure.
Right.
And when so it gets that was one instance where it went out of its way to knock it out of his hand to like absorb it. So he can like reuse that rune.
That was right. Actually something that I actually thought of this a little bit in terms of, We Are Legion, We Are Bob. I mean, both of them are sort of like personality uploads that are gradually...
It's a self-improvement program.
And yeah, it's improving themselves. And that was something, you know, there are some parts where he's just like, I could take this rune and reverse it and, you know, try out and see what happens with that. But when you said that Danny was a plant, I mean, I've got to admit that last chapter kind of went whoosh past me. Did we know that for a fact that Danny was a plant?
So... The way I remember in the first part of the book, the first maybe 20% is that Cal comes into existence and then Cantor, the sort of flying dungeon, happens to be flying by, right?
Sure.
And he says, oh, you need someone to, you know, guide you. And I've got just the person, it's Danny, right? And sends Danny down to, you know, guide him through all this. And she becomes his, I mean, it's sort of like a mentor thing, but she's not a dungeon, right? She's a will-o'-wisp.
Right.
She or a dungeon
gradually
wisp.
Sort of turns into his familiar.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if familiar is like...
Sorry, I withdraw.
I don't want to, you know, call you out on a technical detail.
My God, this is what it's like talking to me.
But, you know, it's just sort of, you know, very convenient. And I'm wondering if, you know, this is going to pop out somewhere else, like in the second or third book that, you know, maybe, you know, the introduction of Danny isn't all, you know, good things.
It could be. I didn't really get that, but it could be a plant from, you know, the other side.
Right. Okay, so we don't know. This isn't actually...
I'm now metagaming the book.
So this isn't actually revealed in that last chapter made me go,
No.
This is just...
This is me speculating at this point.
I mean, I think it was more of a... I mean, I think Dan is more of a plot device, right? But I think... If anything, I don't think, my opinion is, I don't think Danny was evil, but it could be a plant from more of a good dungeon because he basically said, oh, if you had been, well, the funny thing was maybe a neutral dungeon because he said if you had been an infernal or...
Right. She warns him of becoming too powerful in the sort of evil axis, right? Because then she was like, oh, the guilds will come and just destroy you because we don't need you, you know, getting too much stronger than you already are.
Right. But she said if you had been basically good or evil, you know, your stone color shows what kind of alignment you are basically. You know, and if you were aligned good or evil, he would have just killed you because if you're evil, you know, that causes things. And if you're good, that also causes war. So yay. So he sounds much more neutral in that case. But anyway.
All right. Well, this is the book I believe that we could discuss without any possible end. And before that actually it's happens.
The never ending story.
No, we'll do that one later.
Displacer Beast or Distortion Cat, as it were.
We didn't even get into.
Didn't even get through all of our notes.
Background research on the Distortion Cat. All right. Was there anything else we wanted to talk about?
Bunnies. Not really.
Was there tea? I don't remember any.
I'm pretty sure there was not. There was a little bit of
dungeon tea,
wine or ale or something, but yeah. I don't think they had any. They had acid, lots of acid.
That's not a food unless you're licking it off of a blotter.
It's a liquid is what I mean.
Good. Remind me not to ever drink any of your tea.
Oh, you meant tea.
I forget it's a tisane, what you like. Humans drink.
Foolish mortal.
All right. And what character would you want to be? And or, you know, who would you be? I would want to be Cantor the Flying Island. Sounds like a cool
game. Necromancer.
Of course.
The Necromancer. Yeah, I guess Cal wouldn't be so bad.
See that or Dale.
Cal or Dale. Those are the obvious, like.
Too bad there's no Chip.
High I think power.
God. Might want to do Tom the Barbarian, just because I like his name.
There really needs to be an Indiana gnome.
He did.
There really doesn't.
He did have there, a there large really just build doesn't. Conan from with Indiana gnome. Or, yes, Tom the Barbarian.
He's a recurring villain in our game garage group.
This has been Narrowcast. Featuring references to only a group of people that probably do not listen to the podcast.
Well, one of them.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott. All right.
And it's not the Scott that you know.
Moving on. It is time for us to gather more essence, as they say, to meditate.
Slurp.
Slurp. So until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.